Well, good day, everyone, everywhere, and special greetings to all those seated in heavenly places in Jesus, our Messiah. The name of this broadcast is Cross the Border, and I'm Nicholas, and it looks like everything's up and running right. Good job, producer. Anyway, this is our live prophecy reality edition, so if you're hearing my voice live on First Amendment Radio or wherever else you're hearing it, we are live, and the chat room, the studio cam is on, and the chat room is open. So come on over to the chat room at firstamendmentradio.com. Go there, click on the chat button, and join the conversation if you're able. If not, just keep listening and working, wherever you're at, whatever you're doing. Let's see, we have a scripture verse for today. As some of you know who listen to this broadcast throughout the week, I've been going through Isaiah, and Isaiah 6, chapter 6, verse 9, and he said, "Go, tell this people, hear ye indeed, but understand not, and see ye indeed, but perceive not. Make the heart of this people fat, and make their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and convert, and be healed." Now we all recognize that from the Gospels, because Jesus quoted that from Isaiah. It continues, "Then said I," Isaiah, of course, speaking, "Lord, how long?" And he answered, "Until the cities be wasted without inhabitant, and the houses without man, and the land be utterly desolate." We see the prophecy here reaching to 70 AD. "And the Lord have removed men far away, and there be a great forsaking in the midst of the land." So did people forsake the land of Israel? Yes, they did. Jesus instructed them to flee. That's called a forsaking in the land. And he concludes here, "But yet in it shall be a tenth." Well, there's a lot to learn from Isaiah, as I've been learning through the week and going through the study. Sometimes it even causes my eyes to not be dry, I'll put it that way, when I read and I compare the condition of America with that of Judah in the day that Isaiah was prophesying to the people. And is there a tenth? Yeah, I think there is. I hope so. It seems to me when even looking north to Canada, and I see the protesters up there, you know, protesters, what a good name. They are protesting. And we know whether they know it or not, they are protesting the Antichrist and his shadow government, though most of them do not know it. And the Antichrist is very wroth with them. And he's letting them know through his surrogate up there in Canada, you know, Fidel Castro's son, it's, Justin Trudeau. Yeah, just, I don't even have to say anything. We've all heard it, the things that have come out of that man's mouth. But when I look at the people and the protesters there, it makes me feel good to see these people with their children and their bouncy houses. It's not just truckers. There's just as many cars, people, regular people that aren't truckers that have joined those. But would they be a tenth? Well, they might be a tenth, probably not even a tenth of the people of Canada partaking in that, but maybe getting close from what I've seen, partaking in the protest up there. So, like I said, it makes me feel very good about it, prophetically speaking. Yeah. They are cat wakes. What are cat wakes, Dale, who don't realize they are Protestants? I don't know what a cat wake is, so, oh, is Catholics. they are Catholics, huh? That don't realize they are Protestants. Well, when they realized they're Protestants, well, then they'd cease being Catholics. And there are probably many people in that church. I'm going to say it again. in that apostate church that are truly Protestant. They just don't know it yet. But God knows who they are because he said to them, come out of her, my people. I love to say that. I love to repeat that for all the Catholics out there. Coming from a Catholic background and Catholic family myself and having been subjected to the Catholic Church in my youth, yeah, I'd like to say, come out of her, my people. That's what God says to those protesters. And see, like I said, they don't even know what they're protesting, but this is the Antichrist shadow government that is doing this lockstep thing over the whole earth. And many, you know, I go on discussion groups and stuff, and many people just kind of scoff when I tell them that the papacy is the Antichrist, that the Catholic Church is the greatest apostasy the world has ever seen. And it is. And it will be and has been. It is at almost, over 2 billion strong now. Is there a greater? Well, yes, we have apostasy moving through the evangelical. And when then we have, you know, we have some cults and sects that are apostate. So you see apostasy peppered throughout all the churches, not just the Catholic Church, but the Catholic Church is by definition a great apostasy. And, I hate to offend any, Catholics out there, but that's the fact. And if you researched it, you'd find out yourself, and then you would become a Protestant, and you would join the protest. Okay, so there we have that. I found an article, since we're just doing news and current events and commentary and worldview this first hour, I really have no idea what I'm going to talk about the second hour, that honestly speaking. So if you have any ideas in the chat room, or you can put them in the chat room to, you know, some questions, comments, ideas, during this first hour, it might give me something to go on. Otherwise, I'll wing it. Yeah, I will wing it. I'm sure I'll make it through. So anyway, this article, I have an article here from, Sovereign Man. And, this is, February 14th. So very current, like yesterday. In the year 1218 AD, Genghis Khan was knee-deep in a bloody war with the Jin dynasty of northern China, a conflict that would last for more than two decades. The Khan knew that China was a powerful enemy, so he took careful steps to make peace with his neighbors so that he could concentrate on winning the war against Jin. As a part of this peace mission, the Khan sent a caravan of several hundred men to the city of Utrar in the modern-day Kazakhstan. At the time, it was a prominent trade hub in the Khwarazmian Empire, just west of Mongolia. Khwarazmia was an empire in decline, and Genghis is reported to have sent a message stating, "I am master of the lands of the rising sun, while you rule those of the setting sun. Let us conclude a firm treaty of friendship and peace." But the governor of Utrar, a man named Inalkuk, had the Mongolian trade delegates arrested and killed and seized their wares. Legend has it that a sole survivor escaped and rode a camel all the way back to Mongolia to inform the Khan. Upon hearing the news, Genghis Khan tried again to make peace, and he sent a second mission of three ambassadors directly to Sultan Mohammed II, head of the Khwarazmian Empire, in what may be the most idiotic diplomatic failure in history. Mohammed beheaded one of the envoys and unmanned the other two. It was almost as if they were deliberately trying to provoke Genghis Khan and engage him in a completely unnecessary war. But war is exactly what they got. Genghis was so enraged that he temporarily set aside his invasion of China so that he could destroy Khwarazmia. And he did. Within 2 years, the Khwarazmian Empire had fallen to the Mongols thanks to their leader's extraordinary stupidity. But the story doesn't end there. The conquest of the Khwarazmian Empire was the first time that the Mongolians had pushed westward. Up until that point, they had been consumed by China and East Asia. But now their territory was growing, and they wanted more, so they kept pushing west. In the spring of 1223, a large Mongol army under the command of Jebe found itself in Eastern Europe on the Kalka River territory controlled by the Kievan Rus. The Kievan Rus were a major European power at the time, comprising much of the modern-day Russia, Ukraine, Belarus. Coincidentally, the Kalka River is near Russia-Ukraine border, where today's diplomatic failures are playing out. The Kievan Rus set out an army to engage the Mongols on the 31st of May, but the battle wasn't even close. The Mongols annihilated the Kievan Rus forces. At that point, the Mongols could have continued marching west, conquering everything in their path, but they didn't. They turned back east and didn't return for another 13 years. You'd think that the Kievan Rus leadership would have been mortified at the discovery of their powerful new enemy. They had seen with their own eyes how devastating the Mongols were. They knew the risks. And yet, with clear knowledge of the Mongol threat, the princes of the Kievan Rus spent the next 13 years doing absolutely nothing to prepare. The Mongols finally returned years later, at which point it was far too late for the Kievan Rus to prepare defenses. Within 4 years, their entire territory belonged to the Mongols, and the city of Kiev had been razed and its population brutally slaughtered. The author says, "I've always thought there are so many lessons to this story, and they're particularly appropriate these days. For one, failures of leadership can have cascading effects. Muhammad II and his governor in Utrar probably didn't think much of their decision to kill the Mongolian ambassadors in 1218. But the consequences of their failure resulted in a completely unnecessary war, the slaughter of countless people, and the end of their empire. More importantly, though this historical episode shows how failing to prepare for obvious threats can lead to catastrophic outcomes. In 1223, the princes of the Kievan Rus knew that a second Mongolian invasion was almost a 100% certainty. They didn't know precisely when it would take place, but they knew the risk was real, yet they did absolutely nothing to prepare. This is the world we are living in today. Left and right, and there are clear, obvious risks everywhere. Oh, leaders are failing left and right, and there are clear, obvious risks everywhere. As I write these words to you, the U.S. State Department seems hell-bent on deliberately provoking a completely unnecessary conflict with Russia. Public health officials continue to wreak havoc on everything from the economy to childhood development to people's mental health. And, of course, we have the politicians who feel entitled to tell us what to wear in our faces, what chemicals to put in our bodies, what we're allowed to say, and who we're allowed to donate money to. They force-feed our children in ultra-woke Marxist curriculum in school, and then tell parents we have no business influencing the education of our own children. These people are liars and cowards. They are incapable of telling the truth, treating people with dignity, or facing up to the consequences of their actions. And like Muhammad too, they don't consider the potentially devastating long-term implications of their decisions. The threats they've created are very real. They've managed to push inflation to a 40-plus year high. They've spent so much money that the U.S. national debt recently surpassed $30 trillion. They abandoned hundreds of billions of dollars in military equipment to their sworn enemy in Afghanistan. then disgracefully turned their backs on their friends and allies. They vanquished the real economy, i.e., the actual production of goods and services by hard-working people and small businesses. They've corrupted the education system. Then, there's a looming Social Security catastrophe. In its most recent annual report, the Social Security trustees, which include the U.S. Treasury Secretary, state that the program's primary trust fund will be depleted by 2023, just 11 years from now. Well, you can accelerate that with inflation, which we are experiencing. Continuing, that's less time than it took for the Mongolians to return to Kievan Rus. They've practically given you a date to circle on your calendar for when Social Security will run out of money. And if you think they'll simply bail out Social Security when the time comes, you should know that Social Security estimates its own long-term funding gap at $59.8 trillion. That's way beyond a bailout. It might not be as savage as those of the Mongols, but Social Security is yet another of many crises they've managed to engineer. It just happens to be one with a very predictable outcome. All this is a way of encouraging you to think clearly about risk. Our weak, spineless, incompetent leaders are creating one catastrophe after another. It is important to remain optimistic. The world is not coming to an end. But it is critical to prepare for obvious risks. Yeah. Eddie says it's critical to have a plan B. But anyway, I thought that was a great article from our sovereign man there. But, yeah, and speaking of Social Security, a lot of people are counting on that. As a matter of fact, there may be people that will struggle about, you know, participating and giving homage to the Antichrist, who controls all the monetary systems of the world right now. That's right, right now. I know all those pre-trib rapturists out there and those left-behind believers, they don't even want to believe that it's going to take more than instantly in the last 7 or 3.5 years, because the Antichrist is supposed to rise and instantly take over the world and control everything. No, these things take time. And the Antichrist has been working very hard to take over the world. And he's done a very good job of doing it stealthily while teaching people that no way could the papacy be the seat of the Antichrist. People just, they can't believe it. Why can't they believe it? Well, because the Antichrist and his shadow government, which is very highly involved in education at every level, right? Public schools, seminaries, media, entertainment. Yeah, they're highly involved everywhere. And of course, they totally control the mainstream media. Yeah. So if you think there's some kind of accidental thing to this lockstep going on, you have to know that there is a coordinated worldwide effort going on. And it only points to one character from Bible history and prophecy. And that is the Antichrist and those that work in the shadows for him. And once you see it, it's no longer in the shadows. It's out on the surface. But as long as he can blind your eyes and keep you deluded, well, you'll never see it. And that's the truth. Your taxes go to the Antichrist. Of course they do, because he owns the income tax as his. And why would the Antichrist want income taxes? Well, because he loves Inquisition. And even though it's written into the Constitution of the United States of America that there shall be no direct tax with the federal government, guess what? How did that happen? Oh, and it just so happens that it's one of the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. Gosh, how did we get an income tax? Well, it was only on the income of federally recognized corporations and other fictional entities. There it is. And that's what they were taxing at 1%. They said, oh, it's only 1%, because after that, someone, because they tried or to get people, you know, to do it individually, but the Supreme Court kicked that back and said, no, you can't. That's a direct tax. And, but anyway, and we all know how during World War II that, they tricked the people and got them to volunteer because it became patriotic, your patriotic duty. See, the Antichrist is really slick. And his minions, they knew exactly what they were doing. And, you know, now, you know, it used to be governments needed money because money was like gold and silver, commodities, things you could trade for the things you need. Yeah, that's real money. Okay. Real substance, and governments needed real substance. But now they just print money out of thin air and thereby rob all the people. They don't need taxes. They can just print all the money they want. You know, witness reality. But they must have the Inquisition. Yeah. Yeah, ratio studiorum. Your taxes go to the Antichrist. Okay, well, we're coming up to the end of this first segment here. If you got any ideas what you would like to talk about, question, comments about, let's see, prophecy, second hour, make sure you get something in the chat room if you got any ideas for me. It would help me out a little bit. And when we come back, we've got some other articles to look at, current events. We're going to look at it with a historical, prophetical worldview. That's what we're doing, a prophecy reality check or prophecy reality worldview of what's going on out there. And let's see. I'm going to a break in a few seconds. So let's see. You're listening to Cross the Border. My name is Nicholas Arthur. The name of this broadcast is Cross the Border. This is a live prophecy reality edition. We come here once a week, turn on the studio cam, open up the chat room. Well, it's always open, but I open it up because I go in there. And go to my website there, crosstheborder.org or nicholasarthur.wordpress.com. Make sure you press the follow button there. And also, you can listen 24/7 to First Amendment Radio on our Prophecy Reality News app on your, Android device. And we have a page for Apple and Android devices that is firstamendmentradio.com/MOBI. So you can listen 24/7. Okay. We're going to take a break. I'll be back in a few minutes. Hi, I'm Nicholas Arthur, and I'd like to introduce you to my latest book, Reformed Prophecy Interpretation, an apology for Reformed premillennial historicism in the 21st century. As with primitive biblical Christianity, historicism is the method of prophecy interpretation restored with the advent of the Protestant Reformation, and had become so widely held that for a long time it was called the Protestant view. My book is not so much about the errors of dispensationalism or amillennialism. Rather, it is about the historicist alternative to understanding many of the same passages from the vantage point of prophecy fulfilled in history. For those that desire more than mere hypotheses, bolstered with conjectured speculation, those who require explicit biblical exegesis and verified historical fulfillment, and are not willing to accept speculation as anything other than what it is, speculation, not truth. This book is for you. Over the last century, this method of interpretation has become almost completely forgotten, even by Protestants, in the face of a method that is based almost entirely on future speculation, rather than fulfilled prophecy in history. In my book, I examine the reasons for this and investigate some of the prophecy which has been fulfilled in the interim, as well as present an apology for Reformed premillennial historicism to the 21st century. If you're interested in a copy of my book, you can go to my website, crosstheborder.org,
and get more information there, or you may also find it at Amazon.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on satellite, internet, or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back. You're listening to Across the Border. This is a live prophecy reality edition. Welcome to the broadcast. And thank you for showing up in the chat room, those that have, or anyone who's listening anywhere else. Let's see. I've got some stuff from Babylon B. 8 ways to keep your money safe from Trudeau. 8 tips for keeping your money safe if your fascist prime minister tries to freeze your bank account. And I guess I don't know if he's going to get that emergency power passed. I hope he doesn't, against our Canadian compatriots up there. But you can see how very anti-Christ this is. Let's see, 8 tips for keeping your money safe. Let's see, if Trudeau is coming for your bank account, consider these tips. Convert all your money into Tim Hortons gift cards. I don't even know who Tim Horton is. This is now the most stable form of currency in Canada. Must be a Canadian joke. Yeah. Hide it under something Trudeau can't move, like a 10-pound dumbbell. His max is only 7 pounds. Write quotes from Thomas Sowell on all your cash so that when the government agents take it, they'll read how detrimental wealth confiscation is to political and economic stability and give it right back. Yeah, right. And I don't think it's cash. It's the digital money that they have total control over. Put your money in a basket and send it down the Nile. Invest in a Hunter Biden painting. There you go. Buy an MFT or something. Maybe not sure what this is. Okay. And he wrote that. I didn't write that. I'm not sure what it is either. Acquire some more money by robbing a store in California. Well, there you go. Shut up and comply with all unlawful government mandates for the rest of your miserable life. That's the easiest path, buddy. That's what the Babylon Bee says. And, you know, this is what we've been talking about, the mark of the beast, the final form expressed in chapter 13 there, where everyone is required to receive the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name, meaning that it's expressed 3 different ways, meaning it's not always the same thing. It's not going to be one thing. Like somebody, it's going to only be a chip. They're going to inject a chip and that's it. No, because you can capitulate to the beast in many ways, you know. It's like this, you know, if you if the beast government is your highest law form, yeah, then you worship the beast. You know, because actually God is higher than the beast law. If you turn to the beast to find out what's right and wrong rather than God. Okay, so God says, say abortion is wrong, it's murder. Or homosexuality is wrong, it's sin. Or adultery is wrong, it's sin. And there are many sins. But the government says, no, that's legal, it's not a sin. You know, so you go, oh, I like the government's law better. So the government becomes your highest power and you are worshiping the beast. Sorry. You know, that's only in your mind. Now there's got to be some kind of identification to buy or sell or trade. And, it looks like it's all going online so that they are, the other thing is, you know, they have the whole thing about give, send, go and the other site that they've already decided to, they're supposedly giving all the money back, but you know, there's some ripping it off going there. They've already lost a million and a half or 1.4 million to the Canadian government that was forwarded to a bank account for the protesters, for the protest, and given to the Canadian government. So that shut down the GoFundMe site. Now, I would say GoFundMe is done. You know, unless you're liberals. And you know what? Liberals, they're not really the most giving people on earth. So GoFundMe needs to die. Yeah, it does. It needs to die. And then you have the other one, Give, Send, Go. They had some problems, but you know what? They're part of they have to participate in the Antichrist banking system. There's no way out of it because it's the only banking system out there. Sorry. That's it. It's the only banking system out there. And the only other banking system is cash, which has, at least you can hold it, you know, the old maxim that possession is 9/10 of the law. If you possess the cash, you own it, but not really, because legally they own it. Those Federal Reserve notes and other currencies that they have in cash. But you could have gold and silver. But I guess, you know, the government can take anything from you that it wants because it has the power to, right? Well, that's the kind of totalitarian control that the Antichrist is trying to get over the entire world, lockstep by any means that it has to take. And it doesn't matter because the ends justify the means to the Antichrist shadow government, as we see. Yeah, the ends justify the means. Let's see, what else do we got here? How's that for some prophecy reality worldview? See, U.S. men's curling team disqualified after drug test reveals obscene levels of raw masculinity. Okay, sustainable menswear without sacrifice? I don't get it. I'm moving on. Trudeau announces invasion of Poland. Yeah, he's a dictator. The guy is pretty much full of himself. He's a Davos devotee of the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab. So there you go with that, as is Macron and others that are working in lockstep. So you know who the main impetus behind the World Economic Forum is. Of course, it is the Antichrist and his shadow government. This is how they work. Okay? They are everywhere. Let's see what else we got. Trudeau reorganizes Canada into the first galactic empire for a safe and secure society. Yes, and we love to laugh, don't we? Okay, shame. Elon Musk donates $5.7 billion to charity, even though the government could have used it to fill 7 potholes. Yes, the government is so efficient, is it not? We might as well laugh at it. And finally, see, Xi Jinping criticizes Trudeau's heavy-handed approach. Yeah. Yes, he does. Sure he does. Good for a laugh. And, that's what we have from, let's see, what else do we got? Ukraine. Crisis, a nightmare. I think we've already discussed that enough. the big VAC cartel is, they should call it vacuum. The big vacuum cartel is wholly owned and its wholly owned subsidiaries. Yeah. See, the mandates are leaving Europe. Is freedom winning? That sounds like an interesting article. Is freedom winning? Well, freedom's pushing back. Yeah, we'll see. You know, God is in control. And all I can say is the best thing we can do is turn to God and, yeah, and give our lives to Him. That's the best thing a nation can do is live to please God. And that'll bring about the best result of all. That's right. Let's see. Why we need secessionism. Now, this is something. Is that why we, yeah, I have this article here. Something I have always favored is secessionism. I don't know why it should be illegal if it's a free country. You can't force people to be free. It just doesn't work. And that's what happened. Despite all of the other propaganda surrounding the so-called Civil War, it was the northern states against some of the southern states. It was the war. Actually, it was the federal war against the states. That's really what the war was. They just controlled most of the northern states and warred on the southern states. And it wasn't over slavery. Slavery was a dying, within a few years, slavery would have been dead. Just as it was dying in Europe, it would have died in America. Perhaps the Civil War expedited the end of slavery a little bit, but probably not very much. Okay, the leftists who control Washington, D.C., with brain-dead Biden as their figurehead, want to impose a totalitarian dictatorship on America. And this is from Lou Rockwell. This is actually one of his articles, the man himself. The tyranny of the, you know, the transhuman jab, mask mandates and lockdowns and preparations for war in the Ukraine are the latest signs of this, but the leftist plans have been long in the making. Yeah, so that's my very point. Is that, you know, they've been working on it for hundreds of years. So I may think it's a little longer in the making than Lou Rockwell even, because I'm not sure that he recognizes who the Antichrist is. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure he doesn't recognize, because if he started putting that out there, his site probably wouldn't be as popular or widespread as it is. But anyway, continuing. Ordinary Americans don't want this. You want it? Anybody out there in the chat room say, hey, I want totalitarian government. No, I don't think anybody's saying that they want this. So I have to agree with him here on that. Nobody wants it. Yeah. Steven says, you can't even force people to see. No, you can't. It's, you wish you could. Just shake them up. Look, see. You know, get some toothpicks, hold their eyes open and make them see or whatever. But nah, you can't make people see. You can't make people be free. Yeah. So let's see. Paper arrows. Okay. I don't know what that is too. Perhaps more on beast powers. Well, specifically what on beast powers, would you like to hear about in the second hour there? That would be helpful to be a little more specific, because I got a whole book on the topic. Is there something I need to get a little more clearer in? Anyway, I'm going to go back to this article before I lose it. Ordinary Americans don't want this, and their resistance has generated this to so-called split between red and blue states. And I hate that, you know, because the red is traditionally communist. Name and where you're calling from? I'm guessing not. I don't know. Maybe I don't know how to use a phone. Okay. Delete. Okay. Yeah. Now, you know, I hate the idea of it. Now it's red means conservative, and blue means commie Democrats. That's what it means. And there are no liberals anymore, because liberals and conservatives are now the two old parties have become the new one party. And then there are the communist Democrats, which are not democratic at all. They want to crush the people, basically. Used to be different. You know, they were all about free speech and liberty, but no more. Actually, the leftists control the new big cities, a few big cities, through corrupt machine politics and pandering to minority immigrants and mobs in the rest of the country, resist them. And I would have a little more commentary on that myself, because guess where I live? On the land out here called California. And those big cities run the whole state. Yeah, they lord it over all of the, because, you know, we have true democracy here in California. We don't have something to save us like the Electoral College, so that we don't have a totally communist Democrat or majority communist Democrat government in Canada. I mean, Canada. In California. Yeah, we're not Canada. Yeah. I don't think Canada's as bad as California as a whole. Yeah. But I love the land here, and there's a lot of good people. We have a lot of conservative enclaves here. The sheriff in the county where I am, he's a constitutional sheriff. You know, he won't enforce masks, and he believes in gun rights and things like that. So I don't think he's going to be enforcing, him or his deputies are going to be enforcing any unlawful laws that go against the Constitution. And so we have that. And it's not only the only county. We have a lot of smaller, less populated counties. But overall, California is fairly liberal, as most of the nation is going anyway. It's just inevitable, but we are getting up to the time where Christ is going to return, you know, from what I believe, and we see what we see. So, but you have the red states and the blue states, and that's what they mean, okay? And blue states means totally controlled by the cities and the communist Democrats in those big cities, lording it over the whole, even the rural parts of the states, because they are truly Democrat. They are true democracies, I should put it that way. Or at least it seems that they're true democracies. Yeah, because they have, yeah. Anyway, moving on. The leftists are determined to crush this resistance. Actually, the leftists control a few big cities. The rest of the country resists them. The lefts are determined to crush this resistance, as Bill Sardi explains. Democrats own the cities, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Seattle, Portland, Washington, Philadelphia, Boston, on and on, etc., etc. Republicans own the space, rural land. That is maybe why... He says that is maybe why fires raged through rural areas in California as the red zones were burnt to the ground. This may have been a covert attempt to force Republicans to move to the cities. Well, I'm not sure I'm going for that conspiracy theory, but we did have some fires, and fires burn where there are a lot of trees, and a lot of liberals live where those fires burn. So, yeah. Let's see. What is it? Okay, the federal government agenda is to impose its draconian measures on the red states that goes far beyond this. Mike Adams supplies the details, with illegitimate occupier-in-chief Joe Biden waging outright war and economic terrorism against red states. See examples below. The leaders of those red states must now nullify federal government overreach in order to prevent their own citizens from being mass murdered by DC swamp policies that are intentionally designed to achieve depopulation. I don't need to go into details for that. You already know. You've been listening to David Knight in the afternoon, and you're well informed as to what's really going on out there as First Amendment radio listeners. So, some of the ways the Biden regime is waging war on red states include economic terrorism, unleashing OSHA to destroy businesses that won't enforce mandates by levying fines of $70,000 per day or even higher, engineered medicine shortages, to maximize fatalities. See, mandates through transhuman jab mandates, Biden is committing medical genocide against every American, working to achieve a mass die-off that will leave states in worsening economic crisis and humanitarian crisis as the deaths unfold. Well, here's the problem with that one is that most of the people that are would be red, for I would say the majority of the people that would be classified as red, won't take the jab. Some of them will. Some of them felt they had to or were coerced into it or believed that the government was doing what it always did concerning vaccines in the past, and they got deceived like a lot of people did. But the blue people, they're true believers. They'll run out. How many do I need? three, four? Well, every 6 months, I'm up. I'm game for it. But as we see, some of them are even coming out of that delusion and now beginning to balk. Yes. Border invasion. The Biden regime and its corrupt DOJ are actively fighting against sensible border security. This is all Antichrist policy. The Antichrist is trying to destroy America, and Joe Biden is his agent. Yeah. Joe Biden is an agent of the Antichrist and is helping to take down America because his allegiance is not with us, the people of America, but it is with the Antichrist. And, the Antichrist bribes, the Antichrist cheats, the Antichrist threatens, the Antichrist commits blackmail. The Antichrist and his shadow government do whatever is necessary. Because remember, as I said before, the ends always justify the means with the Antichrist and his minions. And that's why we cannot win on the temporal plane. But spiritually, we will win, and in the end, we will win. Yeah. And we will defeat them, but it's going to take supernatural power. But don't worry, that supernatural power is coming, very soon, within 30 years, 35 years, somewhere in there, that the seventh millennium will begin, and Jesus will descend with a shout. And then the supernatural, we are going to be supernaturally changed. All of the elect are going to be changed, and those dead in Christ will be raised, and then they will be caught up together to meet our King, our Master, our Lord Jesus in the air. And we will forever be with him. Because we will be returning with him. We will be his kings and priests that will rule and reign with him for 1,000 years. Let's see. Tom W. has in the chat room, 1st, 2nd Timothy. Oh, he's naming the books that I don't have on my website. He says, now that you have done much great work on prophecy, will you be going back to studies on the remaining books of the Bible? Yes, I've already started that. I'm doing Isaiah right now, and yes, I will be going to those and getting those studies done, and I'll probably be doing some over since I've become much more reformed, biblically speaking, since I've done a lot of my studies early on. Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to be. Yeah, where's it? Reform, becoming more biblically minded, more theologically correct, as reformed in that way, connecting more with the primitive roots of Christianity, the Bible alone, and grace alone, through faith alone, in Christ alone. Yeah, that's it. That's what we're shooting for. And I got an amen there from Stephen in the chat room. Okay. Let's see. Okay. Looking at this, money printing madness. You know, or border invasion. Yeah, it's bad. The corrupt regime actively fighting against sensible border security, openly allowing land invasion of states, Texas and Arizona, in order to flood the nation with replacement Democrat voters. And, you know, I've often thought about that. You know what? Everybody, all those people coming across that border, you know, there are a lot of evil people in the world, and there are a lot of evil people coming across that border. But I would think that there were many liberty-loving people coming across that border that might be interested in something like what the Constitution said and what these liberties are that we're so intent on keeping here. And maybe we need to get those people with some information or tracks or whatever where they're crossing the border. Okay, well, I'm going to go into another longer break here because we have a news segment coming up, but I will be back in a few minutes.
The book of Revelation says, "The spirit of prophecy is the testimony of Jesus Christ." This is at the very heart of FirstAmendmentRadio.com. In that spirit, we have created the Prophecy Reality News app for all of your mobile devices, streaming First Amendment Radio 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Available for your Apple, Android device, and smartphone, absolutely free. Get the Prophecy Reality News app installed today, so you can listen to First Amendment Radio wherever you are. The Prophecy Reality News app. Get it now.
Back. You're listening to Across the Border, and I'm Nicholas. And I'm going to finish this article on secessionism because I wanted to get through it. And then I'm going to look at, let's see, Tom W. has a question in the chat room, which I think I might want to address. And we'll just take off from there. Anyone can join the conversation there in the chat room. And I'm not in any other chat. I'm only in the chat room at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. It's a little much for me to have several chat rooms open, so... sorry about that if you're like on DLive or if you're on the YouTube chat room. Come on over to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, and it's chat.FirstAmendmentRadio.com, or you can just go there and click on the chat button and join us in the main room over here. Okay, and I was looking at this Why We Need Secession article by Lou Rockwell, and I got to his bullet points here. Some of the ways the Biden regime is waging war in the red states: in economic terrorism, we covered that one, engineered medicine shortages, in a hope to, I guess, kill off more people. Of course, that's what the Antichrist wants, is his minions want to reduce the population of the earth because, of course, they have to save the earth. Yeah. The Antichrist. I mean, what else would God's vicar on earth do but take control of the whole earth? Yeah. And it's his rightful place, you know. And of course, the mandates, and then the border invasion, and we got down to money printing. Every dollar printed by the Fed and distributed by the Treasury is actually an instrument of debt, he says, that steals purchasing power from the hardworking Americans who produce things. And that's true, because everything that money represents is backed up by the labor of the Americans who work and produce something with their labor, who produce value with their labor by the sweat of their brow, their gift from God. Because that's what your labor is. It's a gift from God, and it comes with your life, your labor. And the government is ripping us all off for our labor by printing all this money. And, well, the Antichrist knows what he's doing. There's no accident here. Okay, election rigging. Oh, do we have to go there? We're all criminals if we believe the election was rigged, at least the last one. If you believe before that, when the Democrats were saying it, when the commie Democrats were saying it, you got to say commie Democrats now, were saying it then it was, yeah, it was true then, but never after that, because they fixed it, of course, so it could never happen again. Yeah. But yeah, I have to admit, I believe in the state of California that, it went from a conservative state to a, to a Democrat commie state, through rigged elections. Yeah, I believe that. It's not the only factor, you know, media control, other things, and bringing in waves and waves of people and letting them vote, becoming a sanctuary. Cause you know, the governor of California, the Jesuit, Newsom, he doesn't want to give me healthcare, but he certainly wants to give it to illegal aliens. So it's like, just come on to California. We'll give you money, free healthcare. Yeah. Yeah. I don't care about my people. I just want you guys to come over here. Yeah. To hell with, yeah, Americans and Californians. Yeah. Okay. Outlawing of medicines that work. Yeah. Do we have to talk about that one? Just listen to, David Knight in the afternoon. Notice how the DC swamp has attacked ivermectin and, yeah, that stuff I use for my horses, and made sure no hospital prescribes it to patients. This is also part of the medical genocide agenda and its war on humanity. And that's really what the war is. It's the Antichrist against the world. It's a war on humanity. And that's what it is, because really at the root of it is Satan. It's his war on humanity, and the Antichrist and his minions and everyone that goes along with him are just his puppets that he's using to wage this war on humanity. He hates us. He wants us all dead. That's right. And punitive taxation under the Biden regime, which is actually run by Obama. Okay, well, that's an opinion. And it may be true and it may be not. I'm sure Obama's in there somewhere. He's part of it, but it's actually run by the Antichrist and his shadow government. Obama's just one of their operatives. Yeah. The IRS will be handed a mandate to raise taxes on productive American workers. Well, yeah, got to punish those people because where else are you going to get value from? You can't get value from non-working people, can you? They don't produce nothing. So, of course, you have to rob the labor of people who really work and produce, you know, products and value with their labor. They're the only ones you have to rob. Yeah. Everyone else gets their money for free from the government, or they steal it legally using unlawful means that the government has had made legal. So, all while handing out more welfare and entitlements to the illegals who are allowed to invade America by the hundreds of thousands each month. The author goes on, bullet points over here. Even if we succeed in rolling back the current totalitarians, this won't be enough. And he's right about that. There's a structural problem with the American government that won't go away, even if the current mob in Washington is replaced with good guys. The government is too big. The American population is about 330 million. States like California, Texas are bigger than many countries. How can a nation that vast be governed by a few people? The situation is even worse if we think about the division between the reds and the blues that I mentioned before. As Stephen March puts it, each side accuses the other of hating America. Well, which one's trying to tear it down? That's the one that hates it. Okay? The one that wants to, make America great again, or return to America greatness, the things that made America great, which was hard work and good morality, you know, and a good work ethic, and loving your neighbor as yourself. Those are the things that truly made America great. Okay. God's word. Yeah. Which is another way of saying they both hate what the other means by America. On both sides, the sense of being under occupation dominates. Every political faction operates under a siege mentality. Everyone wants to build a wall of one kind or another. The geographical divide between the competing American utopias means that in every election, whoever loses comes to feel like they've been dominated by a foreign power. Yeah, I understand that. I feel all that. Clearly, we have disunion, not a union today, and would do better to recognize this and act accordingly. When, okay, the problem is nothing new. When the Constitution was up for ratification, the Anti-Federalists pointed to the danger. In the fifth volume of The Conceived in Liberty, Murray Rothbard quotes one of the most eloquent of them, Patrick Henry. Shall we imitate the example of those nations who have gone from a simple to a splendid government? Are those nations more worthy of our imitation? What can make an adequate satisfaction to them for the loss they have suffered in attaining such a government? For the loss of their liberty? If we admit this consolidated government, it will be because we like a great, splendid one. Some way or another, we must be a great, mighty empire. We must have an army, a navy, and when the American spirit was in its youth, the language of America was different. Liberty, sir, was then the primary object. But now, sir, the great American spirit, assisted by the ropes and chains of consolidation, is about to convert this country into a powerful and mighty empire. Such a government is incompatible with the genius of republicanism. There will be no checks, no real balances in this government. What can avail your species? Imaginary balances, your rope dancing, chain rattling, ridiculous ideal checks and contrivances. But, sir, we are not feared by foreigners. We do not make nations tremble. Would this constitute happiness or secure liberty? That's a quote from, I guess, Murray Roth or Patrick Henry. Okay, the Federalists thought they knew better, and they gave us such nonsense as Madison's claim that an extended government was a cure for faction, not one of its main causes. The tragic result of their efforts was the terrible war between the states. Let's not make that mistake again. Let us try peaceful secession while there is still time. I agree. America should be broken up, and it may be broken up. Yeah, because that's the way prophecy has us going. You see the iron and the clay breaking in pieces. So, of course, now we have to decide how to divide the states up. He thinks it's as simple as blue and red, but, I think I would rather be around liberty-minded conservatives than democratic communists. And I don't know if dividing it up, I think we should ship them all off to China, you know, the communists. I mean, why do they want to bring communism here? Then there will be no choice anywhere. Yeah. But that's the way it's going. That's what the Antichrist wants. And the Antichrist gets up to a point. Whatever God allows the Antichrist. They always think they're winning, but the scripture says that he will have them in derision. And he will. So there's a good article on secession. So now he said it. Let's try peaceful secession while there is time. Now we have to make it happen. Will it happen? Well, it may be forced upon us. We'll see. We'll see what the future holds. Okay, Jace in the chat room, you emailed me about getting some books. What email did you send that to? Because I don't believe I received that email. At least if you just sent it, I might have not seen it because I haven't checked the... But I don't think I've seen anything. I looked during the break. So the one up above, that email. Okay, I'll check my spam folder. It may be there. But does it say Jace on the return? What's the email address? At least give me part of it so I know exactly what I'm looking for. Yeah, your email address, so I'm not tossing it out. Okay, well, that's enough of that. We'll take care of that later. I was going to get to the question that Tom W. had. He said, I have learned from the past I've learned the past from Revelation 12 that the dragon was Satan and that the one-third of the angels are the demons that followed him, are demons that we're dealing with now on earth. Your teaching in your book is nowhere close to that explanation. He says, thanks for that. But have you heard of this teaching? I would be interested in your thoughts. And yeah, that would be Revelation chapter 12. So I'm going to open the Bible up to Revelation chapter 12 and we can take a look at it. But yeah, you know, when I was doing my study, my Beast Apocalyptic and going through, it never even occurred to me, although I used to believe that too, because it had been repeated to me so many times by so many prophecy teachers and pastors that was the case. But here we have another wonder in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns and 10 crowns upon his heads. And his tail drew a third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And of course, we know that the dragon is the beast power with 7 heads and 10 horns. And the dragon is symbolic of, I think it's symbolic of Satan. And it's definitely, there's a satanic power in this dragon that was not in the other beast that went before it. Because it is cold-blooded, for one. It's the only one that's a dragon. In chapter 8 of Daniel, it was said to be diverse, different from the beast that went before it. So how was it different? Well, it had 10 horns, but other beasts had horns, and it had 7 heads. None of the other beasts had more than 1 head, except in Daniel 7, there's a beast with 4 heads, but those were just divisions. So heads and horns, we learn, are divisions of beasts. So that's not really what, I don't believe what it was referring to as far as heads and horns when it says it was diverse from the beasts that were before it, because it was never explained, and I believe it wasn't explained on purpose, because it is continued in the Revelation, and we find out in chapter 12 of the Revelation that beast power is a red dragon. And it is a red dragon, and you'll find out once you name a beast and you describe its characteristics, that's what it always is. It didn't change into something else at any time. It was always a red dragon. Okay? And I believe, you know, that there are several reasons for it being red. And so I discuss that in the book there. As far as the story about the angels, and you know, there are a lot of things that are alike. It's like the story of the woman being a parallel story of Christ being born. Okay? So it's kind of like a parallel story. I don't know what you would call that occurrence, because it happens twice here, and perhaps I haven't found really anything that would tie this to an Old Testament prophecy, but the woman clothed with the sun, being with child, travailing in birth, is very much like the picture of the virgin mother having the child Jesus. But we understand that the woman is the church, and the church is birthing. The church is being birthed because at this time, and the red dragon at this time represents the pagan Roman Empire with the 10 horns. And we know that the 10 horns were only like placeholders at this time, because even John said they had received no kingdom or power as yet, but rule 1 hour with the beast. Okay, the 10 horns, that is. So they were kind of like placeholders. The 10 horns were introduced in Daniel chapter 8, but we see they did not receive power until about the 5th century A.D., when the kingdom was divided, and that was soon after pagan Rome fell. As far as his tail drew a third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them to the earth, and the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up unto God and his throne. So there's kind of a simile there between the symbols being used and actually Christ being born, because he will rule the nations with a rod of iron. But it's not just Christ, it's Christ and his church, which will rule all the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God, unto God and to his throne. So you can see there's even prophecy in there. But also at the same time, if it's speaking of the political heavens, and these are symbolic for what was happening at the epic, I believe the epic in view, and that's what I cover in my book. And that's why I didn't, when I was going through it, I didn't even consider that old interpretation that I learned, because it's really not in the text. It is not there. It has to be imputed into the text. And I really can't find, I really haven't researched into that, but that's something that I might want to research into and reconsider as far as the one-third of the angels. Because I have to say, I used to believe that, but I kind of forgot all about it when I got into the mode of studying, the historicist mode of studying that I'm in, and under the influence of, you know, I mean, I could be wrong on some things, and I likely am. But that's what we have there. And as far as the beast apocalyptic, I was just studying beast power, so I didn't consider that. The dragon is being a simile of Satan, and the stars being angels. Yeah. So we'd have to go back to the Old Testament, because that's where you'd have to search these things out and these symbols out to further that hypothesis. And so I'll leave it there as a hypothesis. But anyway, thanks. That's fairly thought-provoking. And like I said, I don't have a clear answer for that, but I may have to look at, definitely make a note of that and look into it. And yeah, one more thing I have to study and look into. Yeah, they're all here. So I can't promise when that'll happen, because I have, my plate is very, very full. So yeah, looking forward to your study discussion. Thank you for that. Build back better. Looking at the chat room. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, against principalities, powers, against rulers of darkness of this world. And that is of this world, the spiritual wickedness in high places, or the heavenlies, in symbology represent the political firmament, so to speak. So we have that. Not always, but whenever it's apocalyptic. Yeah. I believe it does. Okay, well, we're getting close to a break here, and I need a break right about now. Let's see. Yeah. No more questions or comments there. And, yeah, I will be looking at 1st and 2nd Peter. I was looking at it the other day, what studies I haven't done and what studies I have to redo. And it doesn't, you know, I have time. I've got another 40 years. As our 35 to 40 years before Jesus comes back. So if he's pleased to allow me to live that long, I'm going to keep doing it. Yeah. Like I said, I have nothing better to do. So thank you for that anyway. Let's see. What else do I have? Let's have the Lou Rockwell article. These powers. What else do I have tabbed up here? That's why we need successionism. Okay. Well, looks like I've run out of stuff to do. So I might have to pick another argument. I mean, another argument. Yes, another argument. That's right. I like to debate, and I'm willing to debate any amillennialist or any pre-tribulationist. So if you got one that will follow rules of debate, no ad hominem attacks. Yeah. And being able to recognize the difference between speculation and what is expressed in the text. Yeah. Some people can't recognize the difference between speculation and what is expressed in the text. they believe what they've conjectured is expressed. It's hard to debate people like that because they're always right, because they can, you can conjecture anything you want. Anyway, here comes that break, so I'll be back in a few minutes. Don't go anywhere.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on satellite, internet, or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Nicholas Arthur, and I'd like to introduce you to my latest book, Reformed Prophecy Interpretation, an apology for Reformed premillennial historicism in the 21st century. As with primitive biblical Christianity, historicism is the method of prophecy interpretation restored with the advent of the Protestant Reformation, and had become so widely held that for a long time it was called the Protestant view. My book is not so much about the errors of dispensationalism or amillennialism. Rather, it is about the historicist alternative to understanding many of the same passages from the vantage point of prophecy fulfilled in history. For those that desire more than mere hypotheses bolstered with conjectured speculation, those who require explicit biblical exegesis and verified historical fulfillment, and are not willing to accept speculation as anything other than what it is, speculation, not truth, this book is for you. Over the last century, this method of interpretation has become almost completely forgotten, even by Protestants, in the face of a method that is based almost entirely on future speculation, rather than fulfilled prophecy in history. In my book, I examine the reasons for this and investigate some of the prophecy which has been fulfilled in the interim, as well as present an apology for Reformed premillennial historicism to the 21st century. If you're interested in a copy of my book, you can go to my website, crosstheborder.org, and get more information there. Or you may also find it at Amazon. Yeah, thank you for that, Tom W. in the chat. He says, thank you for your comments. I wasn't meaning to give you more to do. I appreciate that. But yeah, it's something I hadn't thought about yet for some reason. Anyway, I did find an article I found quite interesting, which I'm going to share with you this. The article is Don't Dismiss the Possibility of Gold Confiscation for you that have alternate money, so might want to take a look at this, especially if you're doing rounds or gold bullion rather than numismatic, because they did not confiscate numismatic. But let's look into this. If you hold precious metals in your portfolio, there's a good chance you fear hyperinflation and the crash of fiat currencies. Fear it? Yeah, I don't fear it. It's a reality that I'm dealing with. There it is. Because I admit I have a little bit of sulfur and some, and a couple of, gold coins that are numismatic. Yeah. You probably distrust governments in general. This guy knows me. And believe that they are self-serving and have no interest in your economic well-being. It is likely that your holdings are in gold are your lifeline, or your hope to get through these times while holding on to your wealth. That's true. But have you ever given any thought to the possibility of having this lifeline confiscated by the authorities? In my conversation with friends and associates, I have often raised the question. The typical response is, they'd never do that. I'll deal with that when it happens. I just wouldn't give it to them. I consider these wishful thinking responses. Yeah, they likely are. It's an interesting thought that the greatest threat to gold and silver investment might not be the possibility of losing on the speculation. I don't think there's any speculation involved, but the government taking it away from you. Yeah, it's a more likely result. It's a thought that I found few want to even think about, let alone discuss. If you fall into this camp, you're in good company. Some of the forecasters whom I respect most highly also treat it either as unlikely or at best something we may have to look at in the future. Well, never want to look at it, to tell you the truth. To date, in conversing with top advisors worldwide, the two primary reasons they believe gold will not be confiscated are, one, confiscation would mean the government acknowledges the reality of the value of gold. Yes, this is quite so. They would be changing their official view, which, of course, they do all the time. But I submit that all they need to do is put the proper spin on it. Two, they would meet greater resistance back than they did back in 33. That was the last century there, 1933. He continues, I expect that this is also true, but that a plan will be in place to deal with that resistance. Of course, they always have a plan, whether it's effective, real, workable or whatever, doesn't matter. They'll do what they want to do. Okay. We'll address both these assertions in more detail shortly, but first, a bit of history. 1933, Franklin Roosevelt came into office and immediately created the Emergency Banking Act, which demanded that all those who hold gold, other than personal jewelry, turn it into approved banks. Holders were given less than a month to do this. The government then paid them $20.67 per ounce, the going rate at the time. Following confiscation, the government declared that the new value of gold was $35. In essence, they arbitrarily increased the value of their newly purchased asset by 69%. With what that really means in other languages, what this means is that they ripped off the people by 69%. Yeah. They stole 69% of the value of the gold, at least, whatever that percentage works out to. Today, the U.S. government is in much worse shape than it was in 1933, and it has much more to lose. The U.S. dollar is the default currency of the world, but it's on the ropes, which means the U.S. economic power over the rest of the world is on the ropes. I think, and what he's really talking about is the Federal Reserve U.S. Treasury, because the U.S. Treasury has been taken over by the Federal Reserve bankers, which are not even American, as we all know, but yeah, we'll move on. I think that the readers, I have to add that they are the Antichrist or the Vatican bankers. I think that the readers will agree that they will do anything to keep from losing all this important power. I don't know if they really wanted to keep that power. I think they'd do sensible stuff instead of everything they've been doing. But hey, they think they know what they're doing. That's all that matters. Whether they actually do or not, Yeah, I guess they're experimenting. Maybe. The U.S. government has essentially run out of options. At some point, the fiat currencies of the first world will collapse, and some other form of payment will be necessary. Can you say Mark of the Beast? Yes, the IMF is hoping to create a new default currency. But that, too, will be a fiat currency. Yes, it will be. That's what the Antichrist loves, fiat currency. That's where it's all moving. That's where it's been moving for the last 100 or so years. If any country were to produce a gold-backed currency in sufficient supply, that currency would likely become the desired currency worldwide. But there's no way they would let that happen. They would kill people before they would allow that happen. And they have done that, by the way. Yeah. And even recently. Okay, fractional banking would be expected. Yeah, because that's, of course, a communist system. Is fractional banking and a graduated income tax. As most readers know, the Chinese, Indians, Russians, and others see opportunity and are building up their gold reserves quickly and substantially. If these countries were to agree to introduce a new gold-backed currency, there can be little doubt that they would succeed in changing the balance of world trade. That said, the U.S. government is watching these countries just as we are, and they are aware of the great threat of gold to them. The U.S. government ostensibly has approximately 8,200 tons of gold in Fort Knox. Although this may well be partially or completely missing. It may be partially or completely missing. Yeah, they haven't opened it up and showed it to us lately, in other words, and they don't seem to be inclined to do so. Yeah, the people's gold, and they're in Fort Knox. That's our gold, the people's gold. Or it was before they stole it wherever it went. I don't know. Additionally, it ostensibly holds a further 5,000 tons of gold in the cellar of New York Federal Reserve Building. I thought they moved that, World Trade Towers, whatever. There's something fishy going on there, during that. The Trade Center, demolitions may have had other nefarious reasons. Don't even doubt it for a minute. Okay. Again, there's no certainty that there is. In general, the authorities don't seem to like independent audits. Yeah. You people, the people, your gold, you don't get an audit on that. In fact, there are rumors that the above vaults are nearly or completely empty and that the above quoted figures exist only on paper rather than in physical form. Well, where could that gold have gone? That's heavy stuff. It's bulky. Yeah, tons of gold. Yeah. Okay. While there is no way to know this for sure, it's not out of the question. Either way, if the U.S. and the EU could come up with a large volume of gold quickly, they could issue gold-backed currency themselves. It's a simple equation. The more gold they have, the more banknotes they could produce, the more power they continue to hold. By seizing upon the private supply of their citizens, they would increase their holdings substantially in short order. You see what he's getting at here. Yeah. You see why I thought this article was so important. And it may be that gold will be confiscated worldwide. Well, look at lockstep. If they could do that lockstep, jab everyone with a transhuman experiment, they could certainly take everyone's gold worldwide to back up a new worldwide currency. Yeah. And let's call it the mark. Yeah. They have a currency called the mark. So we could have it the mark. And of course, it would be the mark of the beast that you need to buy or sell or trade, would it not? And you wouldn't get the gold. They wouldn't put it in coins, in indestructible little containers that they could pass around. No, they'd put it in a vault somewhere and say, we have it. Don't worry about it. And we're going to issue currency on that. And anyway, you see how that's all going to work. But yeah, they could pull something like this off to cure the world financial, the worldwide financial crisis that they are orchestrating this very minute. Okay. Either that, or they could just give up their dominance of world trade and power. What would you guess their choice would be? It is entirely possible that the U.S. government, and very likely the EU, has already made a decision to confiscate. They may have carefully laid out the plan and have set implementation to coincide with a specific gold price. So he's saying it's likely already in the works. You think they got a plan? I'm sure somebody somewhere has already written up the plan. Yeah, I agree with the author here on this. Yeah. So how would this unfold? Let's imagine a fairly extreme scenario and ask ourselves if it could be pulled off effectively. The evening news programs announced that the economic recovery is being hampered by wealthy private investors who, by hoarding gold, are skewing the value of the dollar and threatening the middle and poorer classes. The little man is being made to suffer while the rich get richer. A press campaign to equate gold ownership with greed ensues. And since most people don't, then you have the majority, you know, it's the divide and conquer scenario here. The majority will shame or turn on the few. It's a very good tactic. Yes, the Antichrist knows what he's doing. The government announces the second Emergency Banking Act, advising the public that the first emergency was instituted by FDR to solve the same problem during the Great Depression. This act was instrumental in helping with the little man recover, as the average man in the street doesn't know his history, nor how wrong the statement is, and he'll believe it. Besides, the announcement has a feel-good message, and that's all that matters. Next, possessors of gold who make up a small minority of the population would become pariahs. It won't matter that the guy who owns 2 gold maple leaves is not exactly a greedy rich man. No one will wish to be seen as resisting confiscation. Neither will they wish to go to prison for resisting, no matter how remote the possibility. The U.S. pays for the gold in U.S. dollars, which are rapidly headed south. Yes, the Fed will need to print more fiat dollars in order to pay them off. But this suits their purpose as it inflates the dollar even more. Those who have turned in their gold will do whatever they can to unload the U.S. dollars as quickly as possible and will need to find other investments at a time when there are very few trustworthy investments other than gold. The stock market would likely rise, showing the public how the gold confiscation program is working. One last scary possibility. The government demands that gold is turned in immediately and that settlement will occur following confiscation. After confiscation, it announced that there has been such a large number of cases of rich people ripping off the little man, processing them all could take months, possibly even a year or more. A further announcement states that some investors have made unreasonable profit on the backs of the poor and that they should not be granted this profit. This profit must be returned to the people. You can almost hear the cheers of the people. Then it sets about making assessments. The bureaucrats find that most investors do not have formal, acceptable receipts for every coin in their possession. So if you paid $1,200 for a Cougar Rand a couple of years ago, you get paid $1,200. If you bought it at $250 in 1999, you get paid $250. But if you have no receipt in an acceptable form, you get a fair median payment, say $500, regardless of when you bought it. Appeals. Each investor would allow up to 1 year to appeal the decision of the Treasury as to what is owed him. Of course, the investors know that the dollar is sinking rapidly and that he would be wise to shut up, take what he is being offered. Again, this hypothetical scenario is an extreme one. The reader is left to consider just how likely or unlikely the scenario is and what that would mean to his wealth. But bear this in mind. If the above scenario were to take place soon, the average citizen would have mixed feelings. They would be glad that the evil rich had been taken down a peg. Really, the evil rich? Yeah, I doubt it. If the evil rich are hoarding gold, they're the ones with the billions of bank digit dollars, yeah, and whatever property they can buy with it. And some of these people have so much money that there's not enough stuff to buy to spend it all. Yeah, that's the evil rich. the ones that are doing the bidding of the Antichrist and being rewarded for it. So they would be glad that the evil rich had been taken down a peg, but they would worry about the idea that the government taking things by force, because they might be next. It would therefore be in the government's interest to implement confiscation only after the coming panic sets in, after the next crash in the market, after it becomes plain to the average citizen that this really is a depression and he really is in big trouble. Then he will be only too glad to see the greedy rich go down, and he won't care about the details. But, you know, when they start confiscating one piece of property, that means they can confiscate any property they deem. They might want to equal out. People have more property, you know, with people who have less property or whatever. It never ends once the confiscation begins. As terrible as the thought is, it seems unlikely to me that the government will not confiscate gold, as they have little to lose and so much to gain. Those who own gold would prefer to think that this cannot happen, but they have quite a lot riding on that hope and precious little evidence to support it. It is entirely possible that this scenario will not take place, just as it is possible that confiscation will not take place. The purpose of this article is to spark some serious discussion, both for and against the possibility. Yeah. Investors are, by their very nature, planners. It may take a community of investors to develop a legal plan to deal with the above eventuality. The government can easily confiscate what's outside, can't easily confiscate what is outside of its own borders, which is why it's working night and day to make it as difficult as possible for you to protect your assets abroad. And on it goes. So I found that a very interesting and thought-provoking article for all of us that are trying to secure our future and our savings, our labor that we converted into maybe hard metals if you have silver or gold. I have more silver, junk silver myself, and very little gold. I'm not a rich man. but hopefully enough that when the crash does come that I can take a silver quarter or half dollar and go out and fill my gas tank or buy some groceries or whatever. I mean, that's the whole thing. It's an emergency fund, basically. That's it. So you might want to think about that and consider that for your future. He believes that it's inevitable. I believe that it may be inevitable, but I don't believe it'll be a nationwide. I think somehow it's going to be a worldwide crisis, and it's going to move in lockstep, just as you saw the transhuman jab lockstep scenario played out over the last 2 years. I think this lets them know that they're one step closer to getting their 2030 mark of the beast and totalitarian one world monetary system in. And so that may be as soon as we see, because Joe Biden is doing everything he can to help the Antichrist to crash the American economy. And so is his cohort. The other Antichrist minion up there in Canada is doing everything he can to destroy Canada's economy. And that's where it goes, and that's what this is leading to. So there's a good article by Lou Rockwell, but I don't believe he goes far enough because he doesn't recognize the biblical and historical Antichrist. If he did, he would know that if he believed the Bible, and he may believe the Bible, he may believe in a mark of the beast when an Antichrist character shows up for the last 7 years, as most pre-tribulation rapturists do. But no, the Antichrist has been working very hard for this totalitarian control that now he sees. You can see how close it is to his grasp. To think that he will not reach for it and take it would be delusional. And that's the delusion that most of the world is, so much so that they can't even see who the true biblical and historical Antichrist is and how he does, at this moment, control the world as much as any organization or of men can control the world. Okay, well, I'm just about out of time here. I got a few minutes left. Let me check the chat room, see if we got any comments or question. Looks like I got nothing. Not a whole lot of comments. Okay, well, Jace, I'll be looking for your email there. Yes. Okay, well, I guess we got nothing in the chat room. And I've just run out of gas, so. Okay. You're welcome, Corporate. That's exactly what I meant by Beast Powers discussion. Okay, well, yeah, we're discussing Beast Powers. So this is kind of a prophecy, reality, worldview commentary here that we're going to do once a week. And I don't know how much more I'm going to write on prophecy. Like I said, I'm getting back into going through and finishing up those books of the Bible that I feel like I need to redo and that I haven't done yet. So you can listen during the week. Like I said, I'm not doing them live. I'm pre-recording them. It's a little easier for me because I can do it anytime, and or I can get several days done on, say, Saturday or whenever I get an extra 30 or 40 minutes, because it takes me about 40 minutes to do a 25-minute segment. Yeah, no kidding. But that's everything takes more time than the resulting product. But I think it's a much better product, and it will serve God's kingdom much better than, it's a much better use of my time for God's kingdom and my work that I'm dedicating my life to for Him, for His kingdom, and for all of the elect. That's the only reason we're here. If I didn't have this to do, if I couldn't serve God's people this way, I'd have no reason to be here. That's that. Just looking forward to the resurrection, the great day when Jesus returns and we all see Him face to face. Well, may the Almighty bless you and keep you as you travel on the narrow way that leads to life. And keep listening to First Amendment Radio. I'll see you next time.